Welcome. How's everyone doing today? Good. Yeah? Has it been fun so far?
Great conference.
Excellent. Excellent. We're so happy to hear that. So you may have just seen me in the other room. My name is Heather. I'm Program Director for Renew Wisconsin, Heather Allen. And I'm really excited about this panel here today because what the session you're in is community-led clean energy. And what this is really about for you as audience members is, and participants, is how you as leaders in your own community, whatever role you may play, you may be a student, you may be an academic, you may have a business, you may be dedicating your life to the sustainability committee in your community, whatever your role, you could be elected official, you have a role in driving your community towards clean energy. I see some people who do that. And so what we're here today to do for you is to make sure that you have the tools and the resources you need, that you know where to get the expertise and any support or financing options. We're here to help you. So this is really going to be about your questions and what you want this to be. So feel free to like jump in. We have three fantastic panelists. So I'm actually going to read all three of their bios, and then I'm going to have them all come up. You can see who they are on the screen, so they don't need to be waiting while I read their bios. And then each one of them is going to do about 5 to 10 minutes to tell you about the work they've done, and then we'll do questions and answers. All right. There's lots of seats up front right here. Feel free to come on up. Okay, great. So I'm very pleased to present our first panelist. He is Milwaukee County Board Supervisor Supreme Moore Omokunde. He has was first elected by the First District Community on April 7, 2015, and reelected in 2016 and 2018. He's born and raised in Milwaukee and learned the values of community and social empowerment through his parents, Dr. Reverend Tolukun Omokunde and Congresswoman Gwen Moore. In 2019, Supervisor Supreme Moore Omokunde authored a resolution to create the Milwaukee City County Joint Task Force on Climate and Economic Equity. The task force brings together elected officials and community leaders to make recommendations for achieving net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050 or sooner while mitigating racial and income inequality. So that's a very exciting initiative in Wisconsin, unlike anything any other community has done, so we're looking forward to hearing about that. Our second panelist is Megan Levy. She is the local energy programs manager for, I want to say the Wisconsin Office of Energy Innovation, but I should have, yes, that is the accurate title of that organization. So she's in a state agency, and Megan has spent more than a decade working with building energy efficiency, both with the low-income weatherization programs and with the Wisconsin State Energy Office. Megan is currently the Energy Emergency Assurance Coordinator for the state and also oversees the Energy Independent Communities Program, which counts more than 147 communities as members. Many of you here in the audience may be a member of a community that has declared that they are an energy independent community. Megan designed and is the manager of the Municipal Energy Efficiency Technical Assistance Program, also known as METAP, in which the Energy Office provides expertise to municipalities, tribes, and schools across the state to facilitate successful energy efficiency projects. So we're very lucky to have Megan here. She also served on the board of directors of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association from 2016 to 17, and in August of 17 was named co-chair of the National Association of State Energy Officials Energy Security Committee. So thank you for being here today. And we also have Bill Bailey, who may be one of the longest Wisconsin-traveled folks to come to this conference. He is the president of Check Bay Renewables. Bill Bailey started his wholesale business, Bailey's Greenhouse, in 1980. By 2013, renewable energy systems, including solar photovoltaic, solar thermal, wood gasification, and passive solar, provided 90% of the electricity and 80% of the heat required for the greenhouse business. He retired in 2015 and is a passionate proponent of renewable energy and built a new solar thermal heated solar thermal heated retirement greenhouse where he revels in growing organic greens year round. He is the president of the 100% volunteer driven nonprofit Chuck Bay Renewables, whose current initiatives include an annual solar tour, solar group buy, electric vehicle education and implementation, and working with area municipalities, school districts, businesses, and tribes to make solar PV more accessible. Chuck Bay Renewables was recognized by Renew Wisconsin in January 2019 as a renewable energy champion for the 2018 solar group buy that was the largest in the state of Wisconsin. So thanks for being here, Bill. So I'm actually going to have Bill come up first to do your presentation.
Is that all right? I'll put that down. Sure. Okay, I'm trying not to. Too much stuff. Hi, afternoon. First, a little bit about Chuck Bay Renewables. Some of this is a repeat of what Megan said, so I apologize if there's some repeats, but we're basically an all-volunteer nonprofit. We service a cluster of small communities around the Shawangan Bay. It's located on Lake Superior, and it's the gateway to a national park, the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. Our mission is fairly simple, to make renewable energy easier for people to understand, to afford, and to install. Being in the northernmost tip of Wisconsin, and also being in the snow belt, we're an unlikely place to see a lot of solar energy. However, we have had the two largest solar group buys in the last 2 years. Both our local utilities have community solar projects. We have successfully just completed a municipal project, which was very unique in the way it was financed and put together. And we have a solar plus storage project in the wings that will be constructed this summer that promises to be the largest battery storage project in the state of Wisconsin. And yet, Bayfield County has only 15,000 people. Ashland County next door also has only 15,000 people. Bayfield has no stoplights, and we're very proud of that fact. And yet nearly 4 megawatts of solar have been installed in our two-county region in the last 3 to 4 years. If you do the math, that represents about 1 solar module per household. So I don't know, if you do that same math with Madison, I'm not sure how much that would be, but per capita, it's arguably one of the densest solar penetrations in the state of Wisconsin. So we're quite proud of that. Why the Shawangan Bay? I always blame it on the lake. The pristine environment, the National Lakeshore, the National Park, they attract a certain type of person there, and that type of person wants to install solar. They just needed to know how, and that's what Chuck Bay Renewables' goal is, to try to make that more possible. A little bit about how all this came about. A prequel to the story was the greenhouse business. I think the first thing is to fix your own house first. We tried to fix our own house, our own business. We installed all the solar PV, solar thermal, wood gasification boilers. We were still hooked to the grid, but we covered most all of our energy needs. And then it was so successful, we basically wanted to spread the word. Renewable energy really does work. The economics are good. So we had an open house. We invited our local utility, Bayfield Electric, to come. They showed up, which we were amazed, and they brought Dairyland Power with them, which we were even more amazed. And a couple months later, we found ourselves presenting at the Bayfield Electric Board about trying to encourage them to do a community solar project. And this was just a couple months after the very first community solar project went online in Wisconsin in Vernon County. So we were kind of at the cutting edge there, and I think that was 2014. These initial steps helped us have a community presence, and it also helped us to build trust. And I'll talk a little bit more about that trust factor in a minute. We started out with only 3 people, myself, my wife, and a dear friend of ours and dedicated volunteer, Amber Vadnais. I'm the retired businessman that basically gets into the economics and tries to explain the economics of solar and why it's advantageous. Amber is a Gen Xer, a tech wizard. She designed and maintained our website, and she taught us what customer management software was. My wife, Gail, she is an artist, a community leader. She focused on marketing, events, social media, and she basically is our ideas person. So just the three of us is all that there was to begin with, all volunteer. And it was right about that time where we first found out from Renew Wisconsin's summit event, I think it was 2017, that there was a DOE grant opportunity, a Solar in Your Community Challenge, and we applied for that grant, got that grant, and so I thank Renew for having that opportunity for us. It didn't require a lot of money. It mainly required dedication and knowledge. Besides the website, we communicate with the public basically through small things, coffee house events, things at libraries, community rooms, and our solar tours that we do every year. We try to get the people's questions answered through those type of events. Our first success doing this small-scale type thing was raising nearly $1 million in about 60 days. And that sold out Bayfield Electric's community solar garden back in 2016. This is not a high economic area either. Ashland is probably the second poorest county in the state of Wisconsin. Our initiatives became to expand the website, to carry on with the solar tour, the group buys, and to continue to work with municipalities, tribes, and school districts to encourage that they install solar on their facilities. The four most important elements to our success have been education, understanding the economics of solar, understanding the grant opportunities that are out there and being able to write grants, and probably most importantly, working together with other organizations. I already mentioned Renew Wisconsin was very instrumental in us for our personal education, but also every year, Tyler or Michael Vickerman or Amy Hart or last fall, Jane McCurry came up and we did an EV event, which we filled the house up. So Renew has been very instrumental. We also have worked with the University of Wisconsin Extension, both in Ashland and Bayfield counties, and also on the state level. They come up and help us do community events. We have also enjoyed working with, not against, our local utilities, Xcel Energy, Bayfield Electric, and Dairyland Power. We have a strong relationship with our installers, Next Energy Solution. Been very beneficial for us the last couple of years with our solar group buys, also Eagle Point Solar with our municipal projects that we've done, and are also our consultants, Madison Solar Consulting. Niels, are you here?
Yep.
And MuGrid Analytics, which is an outfit out of Denver that we've been working with. So you can see it's gone way beyond the three people that initially started. We feel at Check Bay Renewables that we are a third-party advocate for the community member, meaning since we don't make any money, we don't charge anything, we're all volunteer, that's what that means, no money. Because of that fact, we're relieved from all the financial obligations, and that helps build trust. We're not like a used car salesman that wants to sell something. That eliminating the financial element, I think, has been instrumental to our success. Lastly, the next steps for Check Bay Renewables is EV charging and EV charging infrastructure. We want to work with Xcel in that in the future going forward. Our solar plus storage project we have, a project in the wings with local tribe, Bed River, that promises to be the largest battery storage project in Wisconsin. That probably is going to be a title that we're going to hold for about 6 weeks because I know that there's a lot more in the pipeline. But it's a good pilot project at Dairyland Power. Is very interested in that project. And lastly, we will continue to work with municipalities in our long-range plan. They really do want to do 100% renewable energy, and we are going to help them reach their goals. Lastly, it's all about education. It's giving people the tools that they need. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. So I'd like to invite Milwaukee County Board Supervisor Supreme Moore Omokunde up to tell us about the work of the Climate Change Task Force.
So it is a West African tradition that before you address a group of people, you ask an elder for permission to speak, and I see Dr. Stone is here. So may I proceed, sir? Thank you. I appreciate it. So I want to preface my statements by saying that I'm the son of a preacher and a politician. So I will try to not let my DNA take over today. And so, again, my name is Supreme Moore Mukunde. I'm the Milwaukee County Supervisor of District 10 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And District 10 is roughly downtown 53206, the notorious 53206, the near west side and the north side. So I have the Bucks Arenas in my district, the library, a lot of the really wealthy folks who live in the Modern and the steakhouses there, but I also have 53206, where we have pockets of some of the most incarcerated, impoverished people in the state of Wisconsin. And I live on the near west side in Lindsay Heights, which is being threatened by displacement as a result of development, aka gentrification. And we want to make sure that we have community control to stave things like that off. And so when it comes to the county, city-county task force on climate change and economic equity, there's a group in Milwaukee. It's called MECA, Milwaukee Area Climate Alliance, something like that. And they approached myself and another elected official, Milwaukee Common Council President Ashanti Hamilton, and they said, we want to do something about climate change and economic equity in the city. It was kind of a perfect storm, if you will, to be a very bad phrase. However, it was kind of a good marriage, because we know that if we allow the planet to warm by 2 degrees Celsius or more, it'll be catastrophic. So we're trying to keep it below one if we can, to make it where it's bad, but it's not, you know, it's not going to kill all of us. However, we also need to make sure that as we're burgeoning into these new industries, that we can maybe replace some of the jobs that we lost during deindustrialization in places like Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Growing up, it was always the narrative that if you left one factory job in the morning, you could have another one before 5 o'clock that night. A lot of people were able to raise families, good paying jobs, union wage jobs. You had a union that you could go to. My grandfather was a UAW member. He worked at J.I. Case in Racine, Wisconsin. But that was always the thing. So after deindustrialization, these kind of jobs left. But we know that this industry is going to produce more jobs. So how then do we make sure, So how then do we make sure that those who are often left out have the opportunity to have these kinds of jobs? So what we said, they were going to marry these two things. And they came to myself and President Alderman Ashanti Hamilton in his office and said, we need to do some co-governing where we have community groups that work with elected officials to talk about climate change and economic equity. And President Hamilton, to his credit and in his ingenious, said, well, we need to create a joint city-county task force on climate change and economic equity. And we said, great, let's do it. And so we checked all of our boxes, and we had maybe, I think it's our fourth meeting this past Monday. And we have great work groups. There's a work group tonight meeting talking about jobs and equity. And there's one tomorrow talking about education and outreach. And we have another one dealing with transportation, et cetera, some of the number of things that we're doing. So it's really important that we talk about climate change. And I think a lot of our young people are leading the way, saying, you're not going to leave us a horrible planet. So we want to do something now. We got about 10 years before, you know, we have to make these things happen. And so we're talking about that, but also what is also just as catastrophic is the amount of jobs that have left, especially places like the north side of Milwaukee. And so if we can marry these two things and take them into the future together, it's all for the better. So that was my biggest thing, is like, yeah, let's save the planet so we can live here and not have our seals and polar bears die and our young people be choked out due to ash and everything that's laying everywhere. However, let's also get those jobs as well. So those were equally important to me as well. And so I thank you for allowing me to speak, and I'll sit down. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you. I'd like to welcome Megan Levy from the Wisconsin Office of Energy Innovation up to the dais.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Heather. Thank you, Renew, for having me here today and having me on this panel with these two amazing other people who I'm so excited to meet and know. You know, I've heard about Bill Bailey. I've heard about all the good work Milwaukee's doing, but it's nice to It's nice to be here in the same room because we got to get together on this. Those of you who have been paying attention for the last 8 years may be saying, what's the state got to say about this? They haven't been doing anything. And for some, to some extent, you'd be right. But we have been doing what we can. And I would say we're really excited. This has been a really inspiring day so far. Excited about Governor's Executive Order 38 that creates the new Office of Sustainability and Clean Energy. They've appointed a director for that office. It's Maria Redman, who was formerly the director of the Office of Energy Innovation. We're going to be working with her in that role. We're going to be supporting her as much as we can. The Office of Energy Innovation will still exist at the Public Service Commission. So wonky bureaucracy out of the way. But what am I excited about? What am I doing here? Well, I had the chance in 2011 when I joined the Energy Office to take over the Energy Independent Communities Program. And actually, full disclosure, my job was to kill it. I was like, well, maybe I should talk to him first. And overwhelmingly, community members said, wait, don't get rid of this. I mean, Eric Schomburger from Milwaukee called me up. He said, hey, is this Energy Independent Communities thing still happening? I said, yes, yes it is. I'm talking to people all over the state, and they don't want to let it go. They've got their signs. They've got their 25 by 25 goals, and doggone it, why can't we do it? If you guys want it, I don't think the state government should be in the role of telling you what you can and can't do. We should be helping you reach your goals. So now it turns out we have an administration that might just agree with that. So that's exciting. So immediately I got to partner with the good folks at UW Extension. I just saw Sherry Gruder walk in. She's been my partner in crime for all these years. And we are reaching back out to the 25 by 25 communities because we have to use UW Extension. We have to use all of our partners in this. We need Renew. We need the nonprofits. We need the installers. We need everybody on board to educate the communities, as Bill said. As Supreme said, we got to get the young people. They are the ones who are most affected by this. And I think they're the loudest voices. We have to amplify that. And as Supreme also mentioned, which is, I think, the most important thing, this is about jobs. Let's get rid of this fake news that renewable energy is going to steal all the money and everyone's going to go bankrupt. Wrong. The opposite is true. So the more that we demonstrate this across the state, the more that that's going to shine through. So we've been doing the kind of slow nitty-gritty work for these past 8 years. We've benchmarked every wastewater treatment utility in the state. That sounds like a little thing, but it actually took years. Partnership with the DNR, adding questions to the compliance maintenance annual report that probably no one else in this room has heard of, but it's cool. It's fascinating. And we've benchmarked every water utility, too. So if you're with a community and you want to say, well, what are my largest energy users? I know you can tell me, megan.levy@wisconsin.gov. Email me. I've got that. That's your first step to your community energy planning. Then you get a team together, an energy team. Figure out who your UW Extension representative is. If you don't have one, call me or call Sherry. We'll get you connected with somebody. And then maybe we can lobby your county to help pay for one. Because we need more of these energy experts out there in the communities doing the good work. But, of course, you can't just do one thing. I could spend all my time on the energy independent communities. But energy offices were created in the 1970s as a response to the Arab oil crisis, so I spend a lot of time on petroleum. Some of that is figuring out how to get off petroleum, too, I might add. So I'm working with Wisconsin Emergency Management and other state agencies right now to go to all 72 counties and 11 federally recognized tribes and work on their energy emergency plans, their ESF-12s. It's a very important thing. What do you do when the lights go out? This summer we had 16 tornadoes from Eau Claire to Green Bay. That's a big storm. Just the other day, we were about 2/10 of an inch short of a catastrophic ice storm. Those are coming. The weather is changing. We can stick our heads in the sand or we can try to be prepared. And so one of the things, so on the face of it, we're going over people's plans, we're making sure they know who to call, we're making sure that they have relationships. But then with a select number of communities, because we only have a small amount of money from the DOE, we're going to do deep dive analysis of their critical infrastructure. We're going to look at ways to site microgrids across that critical infrastructure to make sure we keep clean water and the lights on, especially for hospitals, for vulnerable communities. And that's the other thing that I'm really, really excited to work on and that I see on the horizon is partnering with the low to moderate income programs and making sure that renewable energy in this state is less about just those who can afford it, but about access for everybody, particularly those communities that Supreme mentioned who are sitting next to a pile of coal ash. That is unacceptable. We can do better. The year is 2020. We need to do better. So I'm really excited about all the opportunities that are being presented here in front of us today, all the opportunities we have, even as a state agency, to sort of, you know, cuts like a machete through brush, through bureaucracy every day, you know? I mean, we're just going to keep doing that. We're going to keep shoveling this stuff or pushing that boulder up that hill because it is important and because I think we can get it done, particularly with the support of communities and of local leaders. So thank you for everything that you do.
That's great. Thank you. So I'll invite our speakers to come back up and come sit in the up front here so that people can ask you questions. And I'd like to go ahead and, unless someone has one they're ready to ask right now, I'll go ahead and get us started. So communities fall on a range of, they're at a range of levels of getting started and implementing these plans or even making a clean energy goal. So I'd like to ask the panelists, and some of you touched on this, but you can expand on this. What's the first step if I'm a member of a community and I want to help my community advance clean energy? What's the first thing I need to do?
Everyone can hear me. I got to stop grabbing the mic. Like,
use this one.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I got to stop trying to grab the mic like this. That goes back to my rapper days. So the first thing that we have to do as community members is learn about things like recycling, learn about reduce, reuse, recycle, make sure that we aren't consuming as much. And really get into that, because that in and of itself is a great number of different things. I compare unlearning consumerism and getting into recycling similar to the way that we unlearn racism. You got to do it bit by bit, piece by piece, and kind of break it down. Know the numbers on the bottom of the items, like this probably has them, the 1 through 7s, and know which part goes into where and what you can do to reduce and what you can do to what you can recycle, which goes in the garbage and does it, so on and so forth. So learn that first and foremost. Secondly, if there is a movement or something happening in your city, get involved in that and prioritize. Go on the internet, start learning about things, start learning about greenhouse gases, start learning about coal ash, start learning about fuel emissions, et cetera, et cetera. And also get with some young people because there are so many ways that they learn and do things that's really awesome. And so start learning, start trying to get into the reduce, reuse, recycle. Start learning about things and then get involved. Like, we have work groups on the task force. There are only 13 members, but we got a bunch of work groups folks can get involved with.
Hi. I'm kind of the hands-on type person here. I like the independent communities. When I got started into this, almost everybody up there was 25% renewable energy by 2025, and they made those commitments in 2009. And it was 2016, 2017, we were halfway through and they hadn't done anything yet. So the first thing you need to do is start looking at your south roofs or your south exposure and start putting up solar and start with your own house, your own business, and get it done. Just start doing it. Understand the economics behind it. Solar will pay for itself. It doesn't cost anything. It literally doesn't cost anything because the amount of it, as soon as you get it up and running, and starts generating money, and that money will pay for the system. So you do need some upfront things, or you need a bank or something to get started, but basically it will pay for itself. If you don't have a solar exposure, find out if you have community solar available in your community, because that's the next best thing. Find a nonprofit that'll do all this for free.
Yeah, and I would say, as a municipality or even a sewage district or a school district, get a team together. Find some folks who have the same type of goals and try to incorporate the youth. Try to incorporate your Department of Public Works. I mean, if you're a tribal community or a town or a village, you've got a couple of folks who are already probably thinking about this. You just may never have had time to talk about it because we know you're busy. So get that team together. Then there's power in numbers. We are stronger together. So then you set some goals. Look for the south face. I would say energy efficiency first, but that's because it's a tick that I have. But you also, you know, but we do need to do renewables because those energy independent communities, the first things we did was we benchmarked everything. We got a baseline going. Then we figured out how we could beat it. You can do a lot without any expensive mechanical projects. There's so many things we can do just by understanding how our systems work, turning them off. I mean, but then let's move forward. There is no time to wait.
Okay, that's great. So have we got any questions? I see a couple questions back here.
Check.
I think that's working. Hi, this is for Mr. Omokunde. I work with Dane County government on these issues, and we have in Dane County some of the largest racial disparities, education, health, job creation, achievement like that. And so I'm curious, we're prioritizing sustainability and equity, social and racial equity as a part of that. I'm curious about your thoughts on how you're doing that within this body in Milwaukee, and also what you're hearing from your communities of color about what they think are the most important ways to get at this.
Okay, so unfortunately, when you talk about communities of color and climate change, many folks say it's a white people's thing. And I have to remind folks that when you think about Haiti, when you think about Puerto Rico, when you think about the Bahamas and those hurricanes and how much stronger hurricanes are now because we're warming the Gulf of Mexico and how hurricanes thrive off of warm water, we have to think about those folks and say, is this really a white people's thing? And then you have folks who say, well, you know, I'm just trying to eat tomorrow, or I'm trying to get through this month, or I'm trying to make sure I have all my funds and resources ready for that. And we have to talk about the future of our children and the planet that we're leaving them and what we are going to be leaving them with. And so we have to have that conversation as well. I think one of the things on the task force we have to be concerned about is not letting the idea of climate change overshadow economic equity. Because we know that both are equally as important. However, there are those who will... if we're not intentional, we'll just talk about climate change and we won't connect it to the economic equity and the jobs and the resources that certain communities need, because not only will climate change affect certain communities more so than others. However, if we are not careful, people will make money off of the suffering of certain communities as well. And so we have to be very intentional about not overshadowing one versus the other. Like I said, as soon as I leave here, I'm going to a jobs and equity workforce group on that climate change task force. And climate change and economic equity task force, even I'm only talking about climate change. But that's for that task force, I'm going to a jobs and equity work group. And tomorrow we're doing an education and outreach work group for the same task force. So did I answer your question? Okay, great. Thanks.
Just to add to that, I mean, we've seen study after study that if you're not planning for racial equity from the get-go of any policy or proposal, then you may unintentionally make it worse. There was a recent healthcare algorithm that was looking at reducing healthcare spending and identifying which patients would cost the most money, and so focus a lot of resources on them at the upfront so that they don't cost the system a lot of money. And in the end, they found out, well, we focus on people who know how to access the healthcare system, not the sickest people. And so there were disparate outcomes that you were investing in the people who actually had the most resources and had the most education and were largely white people. And so you have to plan for equity throughout the planning process and incorporate it in every step of decision making. Are there any other questions? I've got one right here in the back.
So on the economic equity, if you will, I work in the solar industry, residential only. It seems to me that a caveat, every state's different in terms of its embracing solar or not, in terms of incentivizing and whatnot. What is consistent, however, is the current economic driver for most home solar installation deals with a federal tax income credit. That for this year is 26%. So if you've got a $10,000 system, you got to belly up the $7,400. That doesn't speak to those that can't benefit from that. What can you folks do in terms of driving politics, and what can we do as those invested in making this change to get a more equitable shake towards it? Because right now, those that do it can afford it.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, because that tax credit does nothing for someone who doesn't have a tax liability. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do, particularly as state government, but also local governments, is to look at how do we think differently. How do we, in Washington, D.C., they're doing community solar that is paid for by, you know, like a law firm. Everybody puts a little extra money in, and that community solar goes to benefit a low-income multifamily structure. We could do grants that are particularly aimed at housing authorities. We could work with our weatherization department and look at, in fact, in 2010 through 2011, I worked on a large multifamily weatherization program where we did 10 buildings in the Housing Authority of City Milwaukee. We put $250,000 in just one building. Why don't we go back to those buildings, see how they're functioning, and why don't we do solar and storage now? Why don't we look at really, really lifting the burden of energy from this cycle of poverty that we know all too well that people are stuck in, not just in Milwaukee, in rural areas too. I mean, it is all over the state, and that's the other thing we talked about on our prep call was we really need to bridge that urban. I'll just make one word out of it.
Yeah, it's the urban divide.
That rural-urban divide, because it's a fallacy. We have people who are struggling all over the state, and they need programs that are directed to them.
I will add that. You hit the right word, economics. It's kind of my strong suit. We just did a municipal project in the Washburn-Bayfield area, and municipalities, none of them can take advantage of the federal tax credit. So how did we do that? We did get some grants, RECEP grants. We got some Office of Energy Innovation grants, but we also did a thing where we pooled together resources. We put six entities together and put out a bid as if it was one project. And so instead of bidding out 100 kW here and 100 kW here, we were bidding out 5 and 6 and 700 kW. We brought in a regional installer that gave us, quote, utility scale prices. So one of the solutions is to lower your price. And you can do that by volume discounts. The other example is the group buy that we did with Next Energy Solution. By having not just one household, but by giving Next Energy Solution 200 contacts and say, here's 200 people that want to put on solar. Give us a price for doing a bunch of them. I think it was 85 contracts, signed contracts the first year. It was about 75 or something the second year. But it's pooling resources together to bring the prices down. And we were installing things. They were actually doing the installing. But the prices were down, you know, $3 a watt, $2.50 a watt. And then the next thing is they had a product called an RTI, which is a do-it-yourself kit-like thing where the homeowner could actually install their own product. This, again, would drive the price down. We were getting installations in at $1.57 a watt. So, yes, the tax credits are great. You can make 15% return. I'm not supposed to use the word investment because of the Security and Exchange Commission, but you can get a great return on your money if you do all these things. Some of the businesses, for example, the systems were paying for themselves in 2 years. You don't have to get that good and still make it to work. If you can't use a tax credit and you're not a business so you can't depreciate it, maybe it would take 5 or 10 years. But it's still a good deal. And the municipalities that we're working with no tax credits, no depreciation, their paybacks were 10 to 15 years. That's still good enough on a product that's going to last 40 to 50 years.
Right. Well, and then last thing I would add to that is, how about third-party ownership? Because then your installer could take that tax credit for your municipality, right? I hear someone's probably going to bring that up soon.
So, also, just to comment on that, it's really great. One of my favorite things about working on our task force is that I get to work with people who have been doing this since before I was born. And so one of the important things is to couple all this work that's been happening with government and with elected officials. So one, it's important to elect the right people. and to make sure that you're working in tandem with those elected officials, and actually your groundswell is creating the demand at different levels of government. Because you go to the federal government and say, we want more tax credits, or we want more opportunity to do green infrastructure, and they'll say, well, nobody is beating down our doors for it. So you start at the bottom, the local level, the municipal level, the county level, the state level, and then you go to the federal government and say, you see what's happening? There's this groundswell, and then they can't deny it. So then you have people who start having conversations that they didn't want to have, but you have to have it because everybody else is having it. And so I think it's really important to create that groundswell and connecting business with community, with government, and co-governing together and creating the demand for these different things.
And I think we have a question in the back. We only have 2 minutes and 38 seconds left of this session officially. So after this question, I hope that our panelists can stay for a few minutes and people can talk to them and learn more. Okay. So go ahead. Please ask your question.
Okay. Our city has just purchased 75 acres of undeveloped land. There are some wetlands there, and there are some trees that people want to protect. And at some point down the road, they'll probably send out an RFP for developers and stuff like that. And I'm working with a nonprofit, and we're afraid that the city is going to go back to the developers that they've used, and we're going to get the same crappy work that we've had in the past instead of something a little more innovative and energy efficient. Where do I find developers and people who can assess this property with a more environmentally friendly outlook? It would be a neighborhood.
Okay, it's a neighborhood.
It's not just one. It's 75 acres. They're thinking we have a shortage of housing, so they want to develop it for housing. We want more than just housing. We want a neighborhood and a community.
Right. I would say definitely we should talk after the session. We have some model documents for requests for proposals. They're not typically for whole neighborhood development. That's a little outside of the auspices of the energy office. But I think that there can be some examples. And it's definitely how you write that bid and who you send it to. Because to do a green development, but certainly Fort McCoy, which is a little bit north of where you are, right, they've done... Oh, you're in Fort Atkinson, so I'm sorry, I had you confused with someone else. At any rate, we've done big, Fort McCoy used to have the largest geothermal residential development. There's been larger ones built now, but there are ways to write these bids and to ask for what you want. And the green infrastructure, the water development, dealing with the water properly, depending on what part of Fort Atkinson or how prone to flooding, because we're all living in the floodplain of some kind. So, you know, you want to take those things into account, and you probably want to write that bid fairly specifically and get folks on board in your community to write it that way. But we'd be happy to help.
Oh, my gosh.
That's right. Give a quick shout-out to our friends at Slipstream, the Office of Energy Innovation, and the Wisconsin Department of Administration. Division of Energy, Housing, and Community Resources are sponsoring the B4 conference coming up in March, Better Buildings, Better Business, Better Everything. We're wasting 40% of our energy in buildings, people. We got to get on that.
I'd also suggest looking at resources from the Wisconsin Sustainable Business Council, which has a number of member organizations who are doing sustainable work. So it is past time, so I want to end the formal portion of this conversation. Thank you all for being here, and I have a feeling that there are many people in this room that we can thank with our round of applause for all the work you're doing in your community. And thank you. Thank you to our panelists. Thank you for being here.